morning. Today is Friday, June the 16th. Graduation day for lots of folks.
Lots of folks.
High schools, colleges. You guys must be the last one.
I think so.
They're not, unless there's private schools somewhere.
Yeah.
More of a May thing for the 4 years.
Exactly. Most of the 4 years you see in May, just I think the way the semesters line up, you know, for that particular one, it ends up in June. Hey,
either way, it's a celebration.
Exactly.
Yeah, pass it on for us.
You bet.
Our quote this morning comes from Pablo Picasso. Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once they grow up.
There you go.
Oh, boy. Well, it's kind of been a busy last little bit for you.
Yeah.
Tiger, I mean,
things going on.
Bumped into one of your guys, Kent, at the hardware store. And
yeah.
He was looking a little fatigued, a little gray around the edges, so to speak. Not an age reference, but you can take it that way if you want.
We all go there.
Yeah. extraordinarily busy last couple weeks for you.
It's been hopping. You know, with of course major fire down on the waterfront. That always, you know, it turns into an all hands deal, and it's longer than just, okay, we got the fire knocked down.
Right, and then the political stuff you've had to deal with, budgets, part of the ball game, and then in theory you were drying out.
Yeah, you know.
Last week was a little damp,
little rain last week.
How do you anticipate or plan for last Thursday, week ago, with the DA, with Maggie, I asked, how do you prepare for flexibility?
Right.
And I think, you know, you guys, you know, the flexible is part of it,
because
you don't know when a fire is going to be or where it is, or
you've
a medical
gotta,
or anything
like a
else.
Spring, you got to be ready to boom, spring into action.
But you got to have the structure that is a flexible one.
Right.
So in the upper echelons, where it's more static than flexible, how do you maintain that flexibility even when you get to the senior management staff?
You know, you've got the calendar fills in, you know, with all the different meetings and everything. But then when that emergency comes, the big emergency, all that goes out the window momentarily as you go deal with that. It's sort of the same thing. You know, we keep here in our community, we've got the five stations are staffed. If you get a series of calls on one side of town, you shift bodies over to help cover. You know, at the upper end, you try and forecast and project, and then know when the whirlwind either comes across your desk or the tone goes off and you go out, you might have somebody making phone calls or covering a meeting that you were doing.
The oil spill exercise you guys had, and you also had the tidal wave exercises, things along those lines. Do those, even though it takes a lot of labor resource to do the event, do those actually build in flexibility so that guys are going and you don't have to react quite the same way as you would otherwise?
They do help, you know, and it was said in history, the best part of planning is planning. You know, it puts names and faces together, people that may not work together normally as you start reaching into like with the oil drill or oil spill drill. You're reaching into the county, you're reaching into others, you start building that relationship in the planning and practice before you get to the real deal.
Hopefully makes it all a little bit easier. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us, Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief Billy Gillespie. you mentioned the ice plant. Mm-hmm. I guess this was part two.
It was the second go around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Familiar territory for you guys to stomp. I would think, and this is not a fire guy, that it was more of a relief than it was a concern when that one came in. Okay, finally, it's over. It's done. We don't have to worry about this screw situation.
We're not going to be going back to this one.
Not too many tears shed.
Yeah.
Can you have that attitude when that comes through?
You know, like in the case of the ice plant, we'd been there New Year's Eve. So here we are, you know, we're back five, almost 6 months later for the second half of the building. As a reminder, you know, we lost the first half back in that first fire, but we had this structure that was still standing there, attempts to keep it secured. Homeless people, within a week, the homeless were back into it. And when it came into us, you know, the other day, no 911 calls on it. It came in just before 4 in the morning. There, nobody had seen it. And so it had burned. It had burned for a while. And it was an EPD officer coming from a traffic stop on Broadway that said, that looks like a weird glow. I'll drive over there. And got there and, you know, made the call to dispatch. We responded. And here's the building when our first unit got on scene, in between 50 and 75% involved.
Of whatever was left.
Of whatever was left standing that everybody had seen, you know, the evening before when the sun went down.
So the fact that it's on the water, road on one side, empty on the other side, pretty easy, I would suspect, to keep it from going in the one direction it might move.
Exactly.
Take care of it.
We ended up, we went right off the bat, good call. Everybody recognized it. There were hazards with the building. It was a do not enter building. The amount of fire volume, there wasn't anybody going in that place. And so they went defensive. Staying on the outside, setting up, putting the heavy streams in place to start knocking it down. For us, really, at the time, the biggest concern, we had about a 15 or 20 mile an hour wind out of the north blowing. And we had embers blowing all the way to the line of buildings on 2nd Street. And while the rail yard office wouldn't have necessarily been a worry, we didn't want it. Yeah.
You mean you couldn't just draw the line and have it go over there too? Yeah.
Right. The buildings across the street from it, all wooden, were a big worry. And even during the operation down there to get the fire building under control, we put a crew across the street on 2nd Street checking buildings.
Could you see some of the embers?
Embers were carrying all the way across to 2nd Street. And, you know, it's just like years ago when number 1 F Street burned, there were cinders coming down on the gazebo 2 blocks away. And the last thing we wanted was, okay, we're focused on this building. Oh, hey, look, that building's on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My back's getting warm. How come?
Wait a minute. It's getting light behind me. Yeah.
So that is always a concern?
Yes, very much so. You know, we try and look at the buildings, we refer to them as exposures, the buildings that are around a building that's on fire or that's exploded or has an issue, and we'll try and keep an eye to what's around it too, because if we do lose the fire building, we want to try and keep from losing those that are around.
Was there anything inside? An ice plant oftentimes has got some goofy stuff.
It does.
Now, this wasn't a functioning ice plant.
Right. It'd been shut down for about the last 8 years.
So was there any concern at all when the guys were standing there that there could have been an unanticipated issue?
You know, at the point, we didn't have a big concern. We had a couple of collapses. And, again, we hadn't put anybody inside. It's always pretty telling when you hear things crashing to the ground or crashing to the concrete in the building. We didn't, up to that point, have a concern with ammonia, per se, because a contractor had been brought in and had assured that the building was clear, all the ammonia was gone. Unfortunately, as we went into overhaul, and we brought heavy equipment in, we brought 2 excavators in to help bring pieces of building down where we couldn't get into to put the fire out. As they were working around, one of them hit something that had a pocket of ammonia still in it. So we did have...
So like an air pocket?
Yeah.
Not a canister, or anything?
Well, we don't know if it was a small tank vessel or the plumbing associated with it or a pump assembly. It sat in the corner of what had once been the mechanical room, and we had a release with a visible vapor cloud for 4 to 5 seconds. The excavator operator was right there. He did great. He swung the cab clear and was backing up immediately. And it surprised everybody because we'd been assured that there were no hazardous materials from that contractor in the past.
Now, did he say, "I got no problems"? And he didn't? The cleanup of the site.
Yes.
Okay, it's looking as it is. What happens now? I mean, we saw it at the old Pete's Market.
Right, the big pile.
It took a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
Same normal process with this?
My understanding with this is the owner lives out of the area, but the owner is working with a local firm, a consulting firm, that's working on getting everything cleaned up at this point. They're going to, at a point, I don't know how long it'll take, we'll see that property cleared. I've heard they want to take all the concrete down too and make it a level lot, so that it gets it ready at that point for some future development, whatever that is.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Bill Gillespie.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief Bill Gillespie. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Billy, the last couple weeks have kind of been interesting, also not only on the physical response mm-hmm. side, but on the, I guess, personnel, political, whatever we want to call it, the operations side of things.
We've been out in the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know for most business owners and managers, that's the debilitating part. Dealing with that whole side of things, and unless you've been there, you really don't mm-hmm. appreciate it because you don't have the knowledge.
Right.
So much of that is kind of verboten. It's not for public consumption.
Right.
Even if it's a private business,
right.
You still don't do it that way.
Exactly.
How much training do you guys go through in handling that kind of a situation, whether it's non-conforming uniforms mm-hmm. or
the whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that your responsibility? Are you the first or second line? Is it the city, HR, who is supposed to step in? How does that happen?
Well, for us at Humboldt Bay Fire, because we are an independent entity, that lives in-house with us. And if there are things that come up, it goes up the chain to the administration or to the management. And depending on what the circumstance is, we'll either work, you know, if we need legal advice, we'll work with an attorney that we have on retainer.
So you can't access the city's staff?
We've got the ability, we can bounce things off. But we're separate from the city.
You guys
HR
are hybrid,
department.
So it's different.
Exactly. Yeah. We're separate from like the HR department at the city. So we work on that in house, and we'll if we need to, we'll consult with a specialist. Maybe it's somebody that's a specialist, like in the firefighter Bill of Rights, much like the peace officer's Bill of Rights. Certain steps that you go through, say in some sort of a personnel action or a disciplinary investigation. And so we'll bring somebody in or we'll consult with somebody. Hey, this is what we've got. You know, this is the path I'm looking at. Any pitfalls, or is this the proper way to handle this? And so we'll reach outside to somebody because, you know, you don't get a full instruction manual that says, okay, here's how you do this. And you definitely, until you've done them, you don't have the background in it.
No, this is a battle scar. This is a chance to learn and do different.
Exactly.
This is the stuff that, it is what it is. The only reference for uniforms I think many of us have are professional sports or collegiate sports.
Right.
There are certain requirements, certain standards of what can and cannot be on uniform. Is that what triggered this whole event, was a deviation off of what the codes are?
It really was. We've got policy and you get right down to the basis of it, and a uniform should be neutral. That way it doesn't lean one direction or another. It doesn't have the chance to stir emotions or issues one way or another. It doesn't become a billboard. It's purely a uniform. It makes you recognizable as a member of that organization. And I can remember, I've worked in a couple of organizations in the past, and it was always said, you don't bring politics and religion into the firehouse. It helps keep things a whole lot cleaner.
Well, and even something that I would think is innocuous as sports.
Mm-hmm. It'd be the same thing.
Pick a baseball team, doesn't matter. You're going to have friends and folks that's the arch rival as you're going to respond to an event.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, so it would seem like that would be standard policy stuff.
You're better to keep your focus on where your mission is.
Is that taught to the new ones, the new hires? Is that kind of ingrained and drilled into them?
It is.
So no surprises when somebody steps across that line.
Yeah.
Now, whatever the issue is, I mean, it could be political or religious, as you were indicating. What is the process? What happens? How does it get, not adjudicated, because that's in the courts, but let's say addressed?
You know, you go through, you utilize policy, and you address it that way. Does it meet or fall within policy? And if it doesn't, then, you know, you try and work at the lowest level and educate. And if it goes forward, you know, there is a process if things aren't agreed on, there is a grievance process that can occur. And that way the issue can be heard out and you can arrive at a determination.
I would imagine that the board is pretty black and white on a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. This being one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, no surprises.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe a pain, maybe a diversion for some, but pretty straightforward.
Right, and you know, like in recently, they looked at what was policy.
And I don't think carrying a 49er sticker would qualify.
Nah.
Or Raiders, okay. Gotta protect my own, or Warriors.
Throwing fair there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And no owls either. Yeah, he got it. That's all that matters. KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:42.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
Theshoppingshow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. Bill, looking at some of the different things that are out there, summertime, the calendar really doesn't lie too much.
Right.
We will be moving into a drier period.
Yeah.
With the amount of rain that we've had, the exceedingly large amount of rain that
we've had. It's been a lot of it.
Are you concerned about fuel load? Are you pleased that there's so much moisture in the system that even though the fuel load is there, it's not going to be as challenging as what it has been the past years?
A little bit of both, because you know, we've had this year, we got to see a tremendous amount of rain. We got a lot of snow. Everybody that's making the trips, you know, on the weekends to the lake is loving it because there's lots of water.
Yeah, this thing called water in the lake. Yeah,
You know, it's not a pond anymore. Right. It's a lake. But you know what it does? Well, it helps the big fuels, the trees and that kind of thing, to sort of replenish. It also makes the grass grow like crazy. And, you know, we're seeing it. We're even starting to see it around our community. You go out to King Salmon. King Salmon's kind of a microclimate out there when you get out on the west side of the road. And just being out there recently, it's all dry. And we're starting to get fires out there. And as you're going, you go
fires
in,
from, like, guys flipping cigarette butts?
That kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, small nuisance-type fires. And so as the vegetation starts turning yellow, of course, the grass crop was really good. Everybody that's been trying to stay ahead of their lawn knows how fast it's growing. And you go inland, they're getting into the 90s. And so that aspect's drying out.
Are we starting to move into fire danger?
We are starting to move in. Cal Fire's has ramped back up. They've got a number of their stations that are staffed at this point. And while it hasn't so much been our local area, we've been seeing a lot of activity like in the San Joaquin Valley and the foothills down toward Fresno. They've been running fires pretty regularly already. And you couple that with the bug kill that's going on
That's kind of the real wild card, isn't it?
It is, you know, with millions of standing dead trees. It's all fuel. And once it dries out a little bit, away it goes, and it burns rapidly and catastrophically.
Now, that stuff, is it, well, let me ask, is it better to have a dead tree horizontal or vertical?
You know, from my experience when I was in the Cal Fire days, you'd rather have it on the ground.
So it would be beneficial for folks to go out somehow and knock down these dead trees.
You know, it puts it on the ground so you don't have what they refer to as ladder fuels that then lead to the crown fire that gets going in the upper portion of the trees and spots way ahead. It's typically the fuels on the ground are a slower burn.
Is anybody doing anything with these bug infested or the dead trees to get them down?
That's a good question, and I don't have an answer for that one. You know, maybe that's in some of it, you know, between the feds through the Forest Service and Cal Fire, maybe some aspect, maybe that's a place for some of that SRA fee to be routed. You know,
boy, I haven't heard about that one in a couple months.
It's still out there.
It's still being paid, huh?
Yeah, it is. But you know, I don't have a good answer how they're looking at it at this point. I haven't heard.
I'll give you something to do when you come back.
There you go.
I just, you know, any of that fuel load, and we've seen it in our area too, over in Trinity County.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You let the stuff stick around, and it will disappear.
Yeah, but it might be at the hands of one real aggressive fire.
Yeah, let's take care of it in a normal fashion.
Let's try and keep it safe that way.
And any quick, don't be stupid tips.
You know, some of the big stuff. You're out on the water. Be safe. Remember the alcohol and the boating doesn't mix. Be safe on the rivers because they're flowing high.
And cool.
And cold,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Have fun, man.
Yeah, you too.
All righty. See everybody on Monday.